speaker, Dave M. of San Diego.
Evening, everybody. My name's Dave Moore. I'm an alcoholic. God, look at all these people here tonight. Don't you know there's a basketball game on? it's really an honor and a pleasure to be here tonight. And I'd like to thank John Benson. John, if I could ask you to stand up, please. Stand up. Turn around. I want you to know, some 5 years ago, I got a phone call one night from central office saying, six years ago, yeah, thank you, and saying, would you like to make a 12-step call? And I said, I'd be honored, you know. And I was in, and it was about 7:30 or so. I was in bed, had a remote control in my hand. I was in for the night. But never refused any request, they taught me. Called the number. Fella answers the phone. And he's going on, he's whining. He wasn't really drunk, but he had a good buzz going, you know. And so he's kind of pitiful and, you know, kind of whiny and, you know. My thumb's getting itchy. I want to change the channel, you know, but I'm listening to this guy, you know. So I'm ready to get into the program now. So if any of you know how to get rid of a 12-step call, it's real easy. You say you want to go to a meeting, and the next thing you hear is click. So I say, well, okay, you know, sounds pretty good. Well, would you want to go to the meeting? And I'm getting ready to hang the phone up because I'm waiting for the click. What do I hear? Well, yeah, sure. Oh, shit. You know? So I said, okay, well, I'll come pick you up and I'll meet you right here and I'll be there in 5 minutes, whatever, okay. So, you know, I go down there and I drive up and I had this, it's kind of a new Toyota pickup truck. And this guy gets in the truck, you know, and he kind of looks at me and he said, you know, you don't look anything like I thought you'd look like. he thought I was somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd be in an old beat-up pickup truck wearing overalls and going, well, out of there, come on in, you know. And I want you to know that man did not look like the man he is today. You know, and I can only tell you that the way he looks today is from the direct actions that he has taken, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really proud of you. I love you, you're a wonderful man. So anyway, get that out of the way. Probably ought to thank a few other people, like welcome to newcomers, happy birthday to all those people. I got to do all that right now before I forget, because I'm going to start talking about me. thank Kathy for being here and all, you know, a bunch of friends of mine come to support me. I really appreciate that. And all the people that are sitting in the back row getting ready to judge me, I love you. I want you to know that. God is here with us tonight. Anyway, what else? I guess that, you know, I got to tell you, there are four people took cakes up here tonight that said in 4 minutes what I'm probably not going to be able to say in the 2 hours that John said I could talk tonight. Because they said it distinctly, briefly, and honestly. That's a lot more than I'm going to do. So anyway, here we go. Well, just to qualify a bit, you know, I as you can tell, I don't look like I should be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was not my intent to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My intent was to have a good time, you know, to enjoy my life to the fullest, to seek a position where I, you know, people would come to me and ask me for my wisdom and guidance. And they would pay me a lot of money to do that. That was the plan. Like some of you may have had plans, it didn't quite work out like you figured. It didn't work that way. You know, I was a good cheat, so I got to get a college degree because I lied and cheated my way through college, through high school. Kindergarten, I think I winged it. And during that time, because I didn't do very well in school, you know, it caused a lot of friction between me and my dad and me and my mother. And I was the youngest of three. My father, you're going to be impressed now. My father was a doctor. That's pretty good. A lot of doctors around. He was also a general in the United States Air Force. Woo! Yeah, I thought you'd be impressed. Because let me tell you what, I was. And I thought I should have been him. We drive on the Air Force base, boy, and the person at the gate would salute me. You know, I'd walk through the hospital with my father, and they would salute me. It wasn't until years later I found out they're saluting him. and that was an abrupt, it was kind of a rude awakening. I didn't want to know that. I wanted to think they were saluting me. You know, I hadn't worked for anything, and I felt like I deserved that salute. You know, and I've come to find out in Alcoholics Anonymous, you call that entitlement. You know, I always felt that I was entitled to stuff that I didn't work for. You know, and that was to be kind of prove interesting when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, to get sobriety that I hadn't earned. You know, I thought that'd be really neat if I could, in my first 30 days sober, I could have 10 years. Yeah. Don't think I didn't want it. I thought I was entitled to it, you know. And so anyway, I get out of high school and college and I start drinking. I start drinking probably in middle, sophomore, junior year in high school. Now, because my dad was in the service, we moved around a lot. And he finally retired in the middle of my sophomore year of college or high school, and we moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, I never lived any one place anytime. You know, and so anywhere I went, I had my primary purpose, right? Move in, meet people, you know, kind of establish myself, and then, you know, leave, because I knew I was going to be leaving pretty soon. That door would close on that whole set of people. And then I'd go into the next one, and I had a lot of fear because I didn't always want to move. I didn't have a choice. You know, I'd come home, my parents wouldn't be there, you know, and I wanted a roof over my head, you know, so I always had to go with them. And it was kind of hard, you know, because the truth was is I wasn't a general, you know, and I had to learn. I didn't quite fit in. I don't know if that ever makes any sense to you. You weren't the child of a general, were you? But you probably may not have felt like that either. I never felt like I fit in because, you see, I wasn't a general and I was going to school, you know, but I thought I was. And so I didn't quite fit in. I was in there with you know, sergeant's kids, you know, and things like that, and I didn't quite belong, and they didn't do what I said either, and the teachers didn't do what I said, you know. They didn't salute me or anything, and they also didn't give me passing grades when I didn't earn them, you know. So, you know, I go to high school, I finally graduate, constant strife. I'm the youngest of three, and so yes, I was spoiled. And that was another thing I was going to get to learn about in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, to be able to say that I was spoiled. And I want you to know that was not something that was easy for me to say, because I fought that all my life. So anyway, where am I? High school? Yep, still in high school, still fighting with mom and dad, you know, hitting walls, breaking my hand, doing, you know, just regular kid stuff. And, you know, and then, you know, I go to college. Now, I hated my dad. You know, we always fighting. He was always making me things that I didn't do, that I didn't want to do. I'd have to go to, you know, he made me go to college, thank God, you know, because it was Vietnam. I know I don't look that old. You know, it was Vietnam, and I was 18 years old. It was 1964. Man, look at you. How old is that? You know, so I had to go to school because I didn't want to go to Vietnam, but I also, you know, we kept fighting and I just hated it. So I did the only thing a good alcoholic knows to do. I got married, middle of my sophomore year in college. Made sense to me. Of course, I didn't tell them about it. And, you know, my wife and I, figure this, we met in square dancing one, got married in square dancing two. And you're probably asking yourselves, how could something like that ever go wrong? It was easy if you're married to me, you know. So anyway, I am drinking. You know, I was going to school and I was drinking. I'd wake up in the morning and go, God, what a beautiful day. let's go to the bar. You know, and I come stumbling out at night going, what happened? I don't have a sunburn, you know? And that was my whole life, drinking. Then my senior year in college, my 21st birthday, the night before, was 2 weeks before my finals, I found marijuana. Now, I know it's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but, you know, still part of my story. On my 21st birthday, I smoked my first joint. And I knew, having, there's some of you that might remember this movie, High School Confidential. Anybody remember that movie? You know, yeah, one guy, yeah, I remember that one. I guess you're not as old as I thought. You know, what got me about that movie was, is I knew what drug dealers did. You gave them a joint, and then they got you hooked, and you gave them the rest of your money for the rest of your life. I knew that, see? And I was willing to do that. I thought, okay, give me that joint, boy. And I smoked it, and I didn't get high. And it was like, stuff don't work. Well, it wasn't too long before I had my second joint. That one worked, you know? And I talk about that because then, see, my dad was a doctor. Well, he also had a lot of pills in his bathroom cabinet. And I want you to know that I liberated him of every one of those, you know? And I gave them away and I took a whole bunch of them. And I tell you, there's songs today when I hear some of the Beatles songs that I cannot help but think of Quaaludes. Just something I do. I don't know why, but... So, you know, I did all this. Well, this didn't always endear me to my parents, but you know what? They never said one word about it. Not one word. They never noted that this entire shoebox full of pills was empty, you know? You know, it was real hard because my parents and I, my graduation from college, after I got my degree and everything, you know, I left. I didn't say thank you to my parents. I didn't even say goodbye to my parents. I went out and I got drunk because that's what I did. You know, I didn't say thank you to anybody for nothing unless they gave me a free beer, a free joint. You know, and that's, I'm not very proud of that, but that's the way I lived most of my life. You know, I got married to that woman. She was a wonderful woman. And we ended up having a child. We moved back to Maryland. And we tried for like 3 years to have a baby. And I want you to know, I was 19 years old, and I did an awful lot of trying, you know. And that was but it just didn't happen. So my sister lived in Maryland. She said, why don't you come back here? Because I might have mentioned I was not working at that time. She said, why don't you come back here and get a job? And, you know, live with us until you get settled and all, and then see what happens. Okay. Well, we moved back there, and the first night we got to Maryland, she got pregnant. I don't know, chicken egg loose, I don't know what happened. But, you know, that was on a Friday. I went out and I got a job Monday. Now, that might not seem like much, except I'd been looking for a job for a year in Tulsa and never got one. You know, Dad had to come up with money every month, and he hated that. And he bitched about it every time and go, well, okay. And they kept trying to send me to doctors, and they kept trying to put me in institutions and things. And I'd get up to a hospital, and they'd say, you think you belong in an institution? I'd say, no. They said, we don't either. We don't know why you're here. I knew, but I didn't know. I knew that I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And I'd seen Days of Wine and Roses. I was drunk. You ever seen that movie? It's a pretty sad movie, you know? I'm sitting there drinking in the drive-in going, yeah, look at that, isn't that funny? You know? And I didn't realize that, you know, that was pretty telling movie because that's about what was going to happen in my life, you know? So anyway, we had this child, beautiful child. All I could do was drink and drugs. We were living in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. And I remember I drove in there. First day we got there, I drove down into DuPont Circle. Now then, you got to remember, this is 1970. Height of Vietnam War, May protest. Everybody's walking around, peace, love, dove. And I'm coming from Oklahoma where, yeah, okay, doesn't that sound like fun, you know? And it was something because I'd never seen this kind of energy before. I lived in Tulsa. I lived on Air Force bases all my life. I didn't know anything about, you know, that kind of a city, that kind of energy, those kind of things. You know, where I went to school is Tahlequah, Oklahoma. I'm sure you've heard of it. capital of the Cherokee Indian Nation, you know. So anyway, you know, I'm living in the city. I go down to DuPont Circle and I meet this guy selling the Quicksilver Times. It was an underground newspaper. And he says, "You want to get high?" And I said, "Sure." And we went over and smoked a joint, walking over to this bar just off DuPont Circle. Benbow's, it was called. Cabin Benbow's. It's going to be a pivotal place for me out there. Because I spent a lot of time going in there, and it was a place where the pagan motorcycle gang used to hang out. You're probably looking at me going, "Why would he be hanging out there?" You know? Well, that's what I wondered. Well, fortunately, they weren't there because they're either all dead or in prison. You know? But I got to say that I went there. Because, see, I like to make people think I was a man. You know, that I was bad. You know, and I thought riding motorcycles was pretty cool. I didn't ride one, you know. I was afraid I'd hurt myself. So anyway, here I am, married, got a job, got a wife, got a baby, got short hair, and I mean, I look pretty straight. And I remember I'd be going out, and Skip, you were talking about how you were shaking before you went in that bar. I used to shake before I went to a bar when I was drinking. Because you know what? I was going into a room where there were real people. There were real men. And that terrified me. Because inside I knew I didn't fit and I didn't belong. And I didn't know how to be one of you. I didn't know how to cuss and kick and scream and fight because I'd never been in a fight. Back down from a lot of them. You get in a fight, you can get hurt. I didn't like getting hurt, you know. But I'd be shaking. And I'd go into those bars and I'd have that first beer. All of a sudden, I could feel it just going in. And I could feel the fear going out. And I'd put a quarter up on that pool table, play that next game of pool. And I knew I was okay. You know, because I shot a lot of pool and I drank a lot of beer and I smoked a lot of cigarettes. And then, you know, I'd go home and I'd drive home and just blackouts. How I did it, I have no idea. And I love drinking. God, I love drinking. I love smoking dope and I love taking pills. But you know what? I love drinking. I loved that beer when it went down and it changed everything inside of me. It took away every bit of fear I had. It made me not only fit in, it made me belong. It made me not only belong, it made me a leader. You know, it turned this loser into a winner. It turned this wimp into a man. It did everything for me I could not do for myself. Whew. I loved it. Pot didn't do that. Quaaludes didn't do that. You know, speed didn't do that. Nothing did that for me like alcohol did. Fast forward, I'm moving everywhere. I'm getting jobs, I'm quitting jobs because they don't treat people right. You see, I was the knight on the white horse, saving the working class. God, I loved me. You know, I just did. I'd get drinking and I knew the management was treating this working man wrong and I just have to quit that job because they weren't doing it right. Now, I didn't know how to do it, but I knew they weren't doing it right. And so I'd leave, and I had to leave that wife. And I drove her and my two-and-a-half-year-old son to the airport. And I got back in my car and drove back home to Annapolis, Maryland, where I was living then. And I was just giggly with excitement because now I was alone and I could do what I wanted to do. And then I'd start crying. Because now I was alone and I could do exactly what I wanted to do. And I knew how terrifying that was going to be because there was no more, there were no holes barred now. There was nobody to come home to. There was nobody to say I'm sorry to when I woke up in the morning. I could do whatever I wanted and I knew I wanted to do whatever I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. You know, so anyway, the fun began and I ran through relationships. Just one right after another. I'd move in with one and I knew it wasn't working and I'd start lining up another one so I could have some place to go because I couldn't be alone. I ended up moving down to the Bahamas. That wasn't too bad. I'm sitting around the pool having a gin and tonic during the interview. And I'm going, thank you. You know, worst thing could ever happen to me. I had free booze. I could drink as much as I wanted to, bottled. The guy that lived next door to me had the keys to the wine cellar. We'd sit out and take these wonderful bottles of wine, pop the cork and let them breathe. You know, and then pour them, taste, and look at the legs, bouquet and all that. After about third or fourth bottle, it was straight up and down. Man, oh, I didn't care. Of course, it's kind of interesting. Later on, I didn't realize it, but those fine wines that I used to let breathe, that would change. You know, to where I'd twist off the cap and it'd just fart. You know, that stuff got to be cheap. But I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't know that I was going to end up homeless and just, you know, living on friends' couches and doing those kind of things. I didn't know that was going to happen because I don't know if you remember me telling you, but my dad was a general. My dad was a doctor. Wasn't going to happen to me. I came from a place where that's the kind of thing doesn't happen. Anyway, next year's I end up in San Diego through a series of women and relationships, jobs, and saying, sure, I'll go, because I didn't know what else to do. I end up here and think I was working at the Dell, and I got some pretty nice jobs, because you know what? You scrub me down, sober me up, put new clothes on me, I can pass, you know? So I got these jobs, and I was working at the Hotel Del Coronado. In a dream job for me. The only problem was, I met this young lady that worked for me. And she said, oh, you're a little tired here, try this. Methamphetamine was going to be my friend for the next little while. It was always there, but I tell you, I love drinking. And that stuff brought me down until I found my next true love. Mushrooms. God, I love mushrooms. Oh, I'll tell you, when those walls would start breathing, I mean, things would just start floating for no apparent reason at all. God, I love that, you know? And I drink a 12, normally, if you're not familiar with mushrooms, usually you'd eat like a gram. I'd eat 7 grams. I'd drink a 12-pack of beer, and I'd smoke a cigarette and a joint, and then I'd go out for a walk with my dog. Boy, I'll tell you, those were some strange, wondrous walks. You know? And then all of a sudden, those mushrooms would wear off, and I'd be drunk. And I mean, it was just 30 seconds ago, that was fun, you know? And then I'm drunk. But it was all right. I'd go to bed, I'd wake up the next day and do it all over again until I couldn't do it anymore. You know, I just couldn't do it anymore. And a friend of mine called up and he said, he'd been to an alcohol and drug counselor. And I said, you know, that's what I need to do. I didn't need to do that, but I was telling him that. I said, that's what I need to do. But, you know, I don't have a job. I don't have any money. I can't afford it. And he says, you know what? It's something they do through the county and they only charge you by what you make. What can they charge me? I ain't making nothing. Right? So I said, yeah, I'll call them. So I called them and said, hi, you know, like to talk to you. Sure, come on. You doing anything tomorrow? And I said, let me check. No, I can pitch you in. So, you know, I went down there the next day. Now, I'd planned to get high that night because, see, I had this quarter pound of mushrooms that I bought. Well, I ate most of them in about 3 weeks and only had a few left. Now, I don't know if you know anything about mushrooms, but if you eat that many mushrooms that short a time, your brain's going to be, it ain't going to work right. That's all I can tell you. It just is not going to work right. So not only was I eating mushrooms at this time, I do speed, I eat mushrooms, I take a few Valium, one time I remember I was still able to count, and I counted 9 different drugs, including alcohol. And I was just about like this, you know, right here, you know. And so, I mean, I was just, it didn't matter to me, you know. I love getting high. So anyway, I'm sitting there, and I knew I was going to get high that night. So I went to this drug counselor, and we're talking. And I'm explaining to her, see, I have a college education. I have a degree in sociology with a minor in psychology. I know the human psyche. And I especially, after all those mushrooms, knew mine. The only problem was that I wasn't quite able to get all those thoughts together. But I didn't know that. So I'm talking to her, and I'm explaining my relationship with alcohol and drugs is how I am with them. And she said, and I sat back and I expected for her to, you know, waiting for the accolades of how incredible, you know, it was that I was so insightful into my own ability to, alcohol, right, you're incredible, you know. However, what she said was, she said, you sound like an addict. And I just, Jane, you ignorant slut. It was just like, I just couldn't imagine how she could possibly think that way, you know? And so, you know, we got to talking a little more. And I said, she said, how much do you drink? And I said, well, I drink a 12-pack of beer or, you know, a couple of bottles of wine. And she said, you know what? I want you to drink that every night for the next week. Are you busy? I said, let me check. I think I can fit that in. So she said, okay, I want you to do that. And something happened, and I said, no. And this no didn't come from just my head. It came from a place where I was not familiar with. It came from way down in here and said, no, I'm finished. She insisted and insisted. And finally I said, I was filled with guilt, shame, and remorse. You know, I don't know if y'all ever had that, but I just feel the guilt, shame, and remorse. Every day, every minute, every second of the day, guilt, shame, and remorse. I hated who I was. I had always despised who I was. You know, inside of me, the self-loathing that I had by this time was just unbearable. But finally, that alcoholic in me said, you're getting a guilt-free drunk. Drink. I said to her, okay. And I still had the piece of paper she wrote. She knew me. Brought two bottles of wine, 12-pack of beer. All right, now the trick was I was supposed to drink that and then stop. I don't know if I stopped or not. That was a Thursday. I drank Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I drank a 6-pack. Monday, I went into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I quit everything that I drank, I quit every drug that I took, and I quit smoking that day. I was finished. The only problem is, with Alcoholics Anonymous, as I saw it, and there may be some new people here tonight that may feel this way too, the rooms were filled with losers. I mean, come on, it's a simple fact, we all know it. I mean, come on, I'm just willing to say it, you know? You know, I mean, I'm speaking from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, and these are my opinions only. Alcoholics Anonymous is welcome to them, but they're still mine. and so I'm sitting here going, you know, I do not want to be here. I don't need to be here, but I do not want to drink anymore. And what I heard you all talking about was not drinking. I didn't want to drink anymore. I heard they, in that first meeting, they said, get a big book, get a 12 and 12. Do you know how much it wasn't working? I didn't have any money. I mean, I had a little money. I was still selling drugs. I mean, fellas got to live, you know. And so I reached in my pocket, and I just had money. So I'm sitting here thinking, you know, do I want to do this? Do I want to spend the money on that book? I know they're just trying to get money out of me, but, you know. And so, you know, I heard that voice again, and it said, do it. Okay. I went up to the table where they had the book, and I said, I'd like to buy a book. And they opened the book, and it said, property of BYOB, do not sell. And one of the guys said, well, can't do that. Look what it says here. And the other guy said, he's a newcomer. And I said, yeah. They sold it to me. You know, I took it home. I couldn't read it. I couldn't read it because it talked about me. Reason I couldn't read it, I thought it was because I was crying, but what it was is I needed glasses, you know. But when I'd start to read it, I'd start to cry, and I'd have to close it because it was talking about me. Remember I was talking about wanting that 10 years of sobriety? I lived in a little cottage, and I was sitting out on the patio, or the little porch of that cottage, and I remember it was an overcast day, and I looked up, and I wanted with all my heart for the clouds to just open a small hole and a ray of light come down and strike me sober 10 years. That sounds funny. I mean, I wanted that. I wanted that because you know what? I was alone. I was all by myself. I had no reason to get sober. I had no woman. I had no family. I had no reason to get sober. And you see, the loathing that I had for myself, I wasn't a good enough reason to get sober. Just for me. I wasn't worth it. I knew that. But I just couldn't take the guilt, shame, and remorse anymore. I didn't know how to get rid of it. But I knew that drinking and drugs weren't helping. I had to stop, but I didn't know how. So I kept coming back. You know, they said, come back if you want what we have. I didn't. Do what we do. Come back. You know, and I kept coming back for 6 months. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps, and I quit going to meetings. 6 months. For the next year, my life got better. So good, matter of fact, I got stress. I got jobs a little better, better, better. Finally, I was making some money so I could get a car. Because I didn't have a car before. I didn't have insurance. I didn't have a driver's license. And I got all those back in my first year. You know, thank you. I was doing great. I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. Except I didn't quite know how to deal with the stress. And things got... So I didn't know how to deal with anything, really. You know, so I started... There was this girl that started working in this hotel where I was working. I knew I was getting ready to start drinking. I just knew it because the stress was just coming down on me so hard. I got rid of some secrets in the first time I went through the steps, but I didn't get rid of the exact nature, that stuff in here. You know, so I met this woman and she said, oh, you're an Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, good, we can go to meetings. I can't today. And I couldn't that day for the next about 3 or 4 weeks until it was so bad I saw her walking out knowing where she was going. I stopped her and I said, you going to a meeting? Can I go with you? And she said, yes. That was the start of my emotional sobriety. You know, because I was physically sober. But I didn't know anything about the inside of what you guys talked about. I had a job now. Now, see, I only went to one meeting. It was a kind of a low-bottom meeting where they said, if you didn't drink today, you had a good day. If you didn't get off the couch, but you didn't drink, you had a good day. If you didn't drink, but you beat your wife, but you didn't drink, you had a good day. You know, I didn't think that was right, you know. So now I'm going to a meeting where they're saying, you know what, I went to work today and I had a problem with my boss. So I turned it over. I had no idea what that meant. You know, so I started listening. Now I'm the kind of person that thinks that I should know things that I have never been taught. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. When I lived in the Bahamas, you know, I met this guy, he owned a scuba company. He says, do you dive? Sure. I didn't know how to dive. You know, I bought a scuba tank one time. My first dive was laying in a dried up creek in the middle of Oklahoma. That was my first dive. You know, I don't even think my back got wet. You know? So he says, well, come on, go diving with us. He said, oh, sure. He said, you can just sit here while we give these other people that don't know how a quick lesson. Oh, yeah, I'll listen. What the heck, you know. I tell you, my ears got that big. You know, when you go in the water and your head's, you know, under the water, you can drown. But I couldn't tell him I didn't know how. Because if I told him, he'd know. He'd find out about me. You know? So here I am once again. I'm trying to listen, trying to learn. I went over to a meeting over in PB and Clancy was speaking. And they said it was in this auditorium. So I was walking around kind of sheepishly looking for it. You know how the newcomers do it, right? And we're looking for it. And there's this guy sitting on the porch. You looking for an AA meeting? Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's in here. I said, oh, good. And I went in there and I heard Clancy talk. And it was like, you know, it was the start of an emotional experience for me. You know, I started coming back because now I wanted what you had. Because I knew what you had was better than what I had. Because you had light. You had laughter. You had love. You had something going on that I didn't know anything about. You see, and I saw people that knew that they were okay with themselves. That guy that was sitting on that porch became my sponsor. And he said, come on, we're going to go to a men's meeting. Oh, no, 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 not a men's meeting. That's where all of them are. You know, so I walk in. Oh, God, they only knew I'm a wimp. You know, they're going to find out I can't stay here for long. Shut up, sit down. All right, okay. And I started listening. I started seeing men get up and saying, you know what, I'm afraid. Holy shit. That guy just said he's afraid. He can't be afraid. Look how big he is. You know, I saw a man cry in a meeting. He cried in front of everybody. My God, I've been holding back tears all my life. Except when I was drunk and alone. You know? And here they were crying. I was, my God, he's feeling. I had feelings. High. Not high. You know? And that was it. So then, you know, so I'm sitting there, and now I start learning. I start listening. Because, see, I started listening. It's always been about not drinking. But now it was about living life sober. It was about a new concept for me, sobriety. It wasn't just not drinking. It was about living life, about finding, you know, that place in me that says I'm okay. Because you know what? There's no place in me that was okay. No place. And I couldn't stand me. You know, and I started listening to these people. And I started, you know, seeing men hug each other and say, how you doing? Not just, hey, how you doing? Kind of grabbing stuff. I mean, how are you doing? In meaning it. You know, I started hearing men talk about feeling alone and scared. I heard people start talking about not feeling like they're enough. You know, like they didn't fit in, they didn't belong, and they'd never fit in, they'd never belong. You know, that they started, now that this one I love. I'm a happy alcoholic. Oh, Jesus. You know, I'd heard that crap before, but I knew they were lying. How could you be? They're alcoholic. They're in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, you know? There's so many wonderful things that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous because something happened that I put the guard down for just a minute, and damn it, you just snuck in. You just got right in. And then I wanted to put the wall up, and you just kept pulling it down. You did it with your love. You did it with your laughter. You did it with, come on, come with us. Me? You don't understand. I'm the one that was not picked for the baseball game, you know, team. Not picked last. Wasn't picked. You know? And it was like, you know, you mean you want me to come with it? Yeah, okay. I can do that then. Because, see, it was all out here for me. Because inside there was just nothing. It was all fear. I was totally fear-based. I didn't know about love. You know, and since that time, when that first happened to me, what I have come to today is I've come to believe in something. I've come to believe that everything I think is wrong with me, I'm still okay. That I am the child of a loving God. That I have the energy of God in me today. I know that you have the energy of God in you. I know that. I have come to believe in a power that's greater than myself. I don't call him God. He is God to me. To me. I've come to believe in a very loving Father that you have helped me to come to believe in. You didn't say believe in this one. You didn't say believe in that one. You said believe in your own. Let me tell you about mine. Let me listen to somebody else's God. I like that part. I like this part. I'm not too big on that one. You know, but I've come to believe in my own loving God. I've come to believe in service. I've come to believe in going. I went out to Donovan Prison for 10 years. Thank you. And I'm so grateful for that. I was walking across the yard one night, and this guy comes up to me and he says, are you with AA? I said, yeah. He said, you know what? I was sober for 10 months. I drank for 2 hours. And I'm in here for 7 years. You know what? If I never heard another thing, I heard that. You know, I don't know about you, but I drove drunk. I don't drive drunk today. I don't drink. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in the book. I believe in the 12 steps. I believe in a loving God. I believe in you. I never could believe in you because I didn't believe in me. You've given me so much. You've given me the opportunity to find out that I'm okay. I ain't great. I'm just okay. Do you know what okay feels like? When you come from a place where I came from? Okay is incredible. Okay is like over the moon. Okay is it's just better than anything I could ever imagine. I don't know if I love myself. I don't care. I like me. I don't care if you like me. I mean, if you do, that's great. But see, before you had to like me. Today, I hope there's some of you that don't. That sounds weird, doesn't it? But I had to have everybody like me before. Today, I don't. My God loves me. He accepts me. He is a loving father. He's not my dad. He's a loving father. He loves me. He honors me. And I honor him. Because he is why we're here. Yeah, he is the reason. He's love. I didn't know that. And this may sound sappy. You know? I sat this morning and with another man, I listened to his fifth step. This man is not used to crying. He found a place inside himself today. If you've never had that opportunity to sit with another person and see the light come on and feel them touch themselves inside their heart for the first time, it's an amazing experience. Come back. For the newcomers tonight, come back. If you think what I'm saying is a bunch of crap, it might be. But you don't know if you don't come back. Please, come back. Find your own loving God. Don't use mine. Can, but find your own. Find that God that when you need that to hold that hand, that loving hand, that it's his. I'm so grateful I'm here tonight. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank the people in the back row for not, judging me too much. I love you, John. Thank you. Y'all have a wonderful night.